The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Well, it's Wednesday, and a really interesting podcast for you today. Really exciting. Today we start with China and their social score, but it's happening here in America. A little announcement from Microsoft and MasterCard that I think you want to be aware of. Also, Andrew Wilkow stopped by from the new Blaze TV. Also, Lauren Chen, she is the roving millennial. It's rare that you meet somebody as well-rounded and as smart as she is. She is really somebody that you need to meet if you haven't listened to her or heard anybody interview her yet. We run the whole thing from the universities to Saudi Arabia and, you know, putting Khashoggi into a blender and making a milkshake for the Prince of Saudi Arabia, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Wednesday, December 5th.
Let me tell you about our sponsor. It is Brick House. If fake news was a product, then it would be a superfood, because superfoods are not superfoods. If you look at the nutrition, you know, it'll have nutritional facts or supplement facts. There's no supplement in a superfood. You don't see that on a package of broccoli. You don't see that on real actual superfoods, beets. You know, it doesn't say supplements on that. That means you have to add something to it. A real superfood is something like Field of Greens, because they have nutrition facts and not supplements. This is real food. USDA organic fruits and vegetables, complete with all the antioxidants. You can get it now, 15% off of your order. Use BrickHouseGlen.com. Use the promo code Glen. 15% off your first order. BrickHouseGlen.com. Experience a better tomorrow today.
Glenn Beck.
Do you remember the scene in the Terminator where the machine versus the human war starts with a gigantic thermonuclear fireball? I'd love that. That was great. Artificial intelligence is coming, whether we like it or not. And it's either going to be started with a giant fireball, you know, something terrifying or something completely awesome. I'm not sure which one. And it's not only me that doesn't know, it's the developers that don't know, because AI is going to be, it's described as alien thinking. We have no idea how it's going to think. And if you want to know, read a little bit about how AI is learning how to play Go and is beating all of the Go champions, which is one of the hardest games to play. It's beating all of the champions. And at first they thought that it was cheating. No, it just thinks completely differently. It's like an alien life form. Oh, and those are always great when they're really, really powerful. All we know is that there is currently an all-out race to see who the first is going to be to create AI. That doesn't seem good. Now, looking at the possible threats of AI, you know, a catastrophic Terminator, I'll be back. I don't think it's Hollywood. I don't think that's going to be. However, in the very near future, an algorithm-controlled economic meltdown might ultimately take place. Instead of the Terminator, it could be a thermonuclear explosion of money. Now, it's not sexy. It's not going to draw any action stars, but this rise of the machine could level our country and our world. And you saw a little bit of it yesterday. It could bring the entire world to its knees. The Dow yesterday took another hit, plunging nearly 800 points. Now, it's kind of funny when the market takes a beating. If you flip on the news, what are you going to find? You look at the internet, what do you find? You'll have an unlimited number of people saying, well, we're looking into what happened. We're not exactly sure what happened. I think it was interest rates, definitely interest rates.
Well, I believe it was the Trump administration or what they're doing with China.
Oh, no, I believe it's the money supply, purchase power.
Okay, all right.
Unicorns playing basketball.
I got it. Nobody really knows, right? And most likely it's a combination of things. including those damn unicorns. But here's what I want you to take. There is something coming. Glenn Beck, gloom and doom. No. It's a recession. They happen. It's a cycle. Everything in life is a cycle. And we are way overdue for a recession. So it is coming, whether it's tomorrow or 4 years from now. The longer it waits, the deeper it will be. But we're already like 2 or 3 years beyond the point where we should have had a recession. Okay? This time when it comes, I think it's going to be bad. I'm not sure how it's going to come, when it's going to come, but it is going to come. But the artificial intelligence algorithms controlling the markets isn't going off of looks and feels. It's not going off and saying, oh, this could be bad. Oh, I don't know. I feel like it's good. No. It's only crunching the numbers in a very cold and calculated way. It doesn't get emotional, you know, like the hero in the Terminator. It can't be reasoned with. It can't be bargained with. You just have to kill it. Okay. This is just an algorithm that is reacting as it was programmed to do. And look what it's learned along the way. AI algorithms now control over 80% of the U.S. stock market. 80%. That means men and women are not really, you know, the ones that you always see after a day like yesterday, you're bound to click online or see in a news report one of those pictures of all of the guys on Wall Street, you know, down on the trading floor with the shocked faces, with their hand over their mouth like, oh, my gosh, this is the worst thing ever. I think I'm going to jump out of a window. You're going to see that. Okay, but those guys aren't really doing, they're only doing 20% of what happened. 80% is a machine. The vast majority of trades are not happening by men and women rapidly handing, you know, giving hand signals, sell, sell, buy, buy, buy. It's not happening. It's all happening inside of a computer CPU. And this is what the machine saw yesterday. The algorithms have been programmed to look for certain triggers and then buy or sell accordingly. One thing they've learned to take action on is when the odds of a potential recession materialize. Something called the yield curve inversion. When that happens, the algorithms see the odds of a recession go up, and they kick in to sell. Okay. That occurred yesterday as short-term interest rates began trading above long-term interest rates. The 2-year and 5-year yields inverted, which often happens in times of economic weakness or recession. The Dow lost 3% of its value because it did rebound a bit. And all of it happened based off of a small indicator that artificial intelligence algorithms diagnosed in milliseconds and began reacting to. So everybody, all the humans still last night were like, I'm not sure what happened. Were the unicorns involved again? No. In milliseconds, the algorithm saw something. Never fear the machines. Fear the programming. Fear the goal. Because it will never miss the goal. You see, back in 1929, and every time we have a major sell-off, what happens? People get involved. And people are like, okay, we've got to bolster the market. We've got to send a signal of feeling that it's going to be great. The algorithms don't care about your feelings. Now, what happens when a much larger event happens? 80% of our stock market fate is in the hands of machine learning. And I think this is a good thing. You just need to be prepared for it. Because I don't, you know, and it's going to be hard because, you know, James Cameron is not working on a script to show you how this one ends.
It's Wednesday, December 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Since we started with the rise of the machines, I thought I would take you to a couple of other things. Remember, my theory is that the dark parts of the world, like China, are going to go right into 1984. In case you don't know, George Orwell wrote 1984. It's really kind of a book based on, now this is in contention, But if you read it, you're like, yeah, it seems pretty good. A book came out in 1922 called We. And it's kind of like Anthem, but it's really more like 1984. And We is about a state that just takes over everything. And you will comply. So George Orwell in the 1930s wrote 1984 about a society that is the anti-America and could monitor absolutely everything. And so you dare not step out of line. Well, that's China and their social credit system. They're watching everything and you're not going anywhere. You're not doing anything based on your social scores. It's truly frightening. However, that's not coming here. There was another book that was written, and this one by Huxley, and this one was called Brave New World. And back when I was in school, we used to have to read these things called books. And we liked them because we didn't have any of those little fancy boxes that you could keep in your pocket and watch all those damn TV shows on them. So we would read these books, and the debate has always been, is it going to be 1984 or Brave New World? You kids nowadays, you watch shows like, you know, that movie that everybody saw, I think, The Island. No, nobody saw that, Grandpa. Nobody saw that. Well, it's the same thing. It's got some of those youngins in that movie half naked the whole time. The debate was, is it going to be a utopia that is that we're all just taking so many drugs and everything is presented in such a happy way through consumerism that we just all embrace it? And then before you know it, we're all trapped. Or is it going to be a hostile takeover of a state where they just build a prison and you know they're building a prison? Okay, well, that's what's happening in China. They're building a prison and everybody in China knows they're building a prison. We all know they're building a prison. Why? Because they've just built 1,400 prisons. They built 1,400 concentration camps where as many as 2 million people have already been disappeared in the middle of the night. Okay, we don't have those. Of course not. We're doing everything for your protection. Brave New World. A Brave New World. We are embracing it because it just makes sense, right? Let me give you two things. There was an announcement yesterday. This comes from MasterCard News. Yes, that credit card company is going to help you out, along with our friends at Microsoft. Now, this is a story completely unrelated to a story that just also came out that Microsoft has just said that they will give the United States government access to all of their new technology. Well, that's how wonderfully American of them. Isn't that great? America is going to be able to have access to all of Microsoft's programs. That is so patriotic. I think I can hear a jet flying in formation across the stadium now. Oh, it chokes me up. It's so patriotic. Since when did Microsoft become so patriotic? Okay, anyway, a question to be answered later, and it definitely has nothing to do with this announcement. From MasterCard News. Beep, 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 beep. Voting, driving, applying for a job, renting a home, getting married, boarding a plane. What do all these things have in common? Well, MasterCard knows you need to prove your identity. So in partnership with Microsoft, we are working to create a universally recognized digital identity. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, so I won't need any kind of ID. Of course, I never will need any ID when I go in to vote, because that's just racist. But if I ever need an ID, my credit card company and Microsoft... dismiss the story about giving access to the government. They're going to just create this digital ID for me. and they will know everything about everything. Oh, thank goodness. It's going to be so easy. Here, take another pill. It's going to be so easy. Thank you, MasterCard. Thank you, Bill Gates. That's fantastic. Now, if we could just have Common Core that makes absolutely no sense at all, but does monitor the retinal scans of my children and is constantly watching their eyes so they can track their heartbeat and their blood pressure and see where they are really not interested and see where they might disagree with a teacher, just so we can make that teacher a better teacher. Oh, and we can also categorize them so we know very young when we know exactly. You should be a gymnast. Come, the state will take you to be a gymnast. I'm sure it's not going to work out that way. That's only evil China. This is a happy place. If this doesn't appear to be the exact same social score system without the government involved and without anybody saying, oh, by the way, we're going to have a social score, this is the same system they're implementing in China with guns. We're doing it and saying, oh my gosh, MasterCard, you've just made my life so easy. Thank you for that. Now, in a completely unrelated story out of the state of New York, there is a new bill being proposed in the State House of New York, but it's common sense gun control. It would require a would-be firearm purchaser to turn over 3 years of your social media history. Oh, well, that seems reasonable because we always do say, gee, if you just watched what they said online, you'd know they were a kook. A 3-year review of social media profiles would give an easy profile of a person who is not suitable to hold or possess a firearm. This, according to a New York State senator and proposed legislation, applicants to purchase a gun would be required to turn over their social media passwords to accounts like Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. And they would have to allow police to see a year's worth of all of their searches, a year's worth of searches on Google and Yahoo and Bing. Oh, they haven't gotten Jeeves yet. As well as anyone renewing their permit for a pistol would also be subject to this investigation. So every couple of years, you could have the government come in and say, we need to look at your social, turn over all your passwords. Now, I'm only bringing this up because I think it seems a little clunky. Why would I have to turn over all of my passwords when I could just partner with Google and they could tell everybody who I am? After all, Google is doing that in China. And why turn over my passwords? Why have any kind of investigative body looking into who I associate with and everything else when Microsoft and MasterCard will know where I've been, who I visited, how I spend my money? This doesn't sound like the Chinese thing at all. Go back to sleep, America. We're fine. Hey, I know. Let's talk about what Trump tweeted today, because that's so much more important.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Why was global warming so huge in the early zeros? Okay. And then after about 2008, it just kind of went away. And then 2010, 2012, nobody's talking about it. All of the wicked predictions of if we don't do something by this date in 2012, it's too late. And it all just dissipated and went away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, everybody is saying, we are running out of time. This is the worst thing. All humanity will be gone if we don't do something right now.
Yeah, it's back and it's worse than it's ever been.
Why?
Um, I Because I think because they lost some momentum maybe after 2008 when there weren't as many frequent, more intense hurricanes and tornadoes, and a lot of the predictions weren't coming through, and there was the pause in the warming, and maybe it was harder to sell.
Mm. Try this on for size. You know how China is building a cage right now for the Chinese people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For the Muslims,
yeah,
Christians.
For everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole society. China is going to be a cage by 2020. This is the largest transfer of wealth ever in the history of mankind. Already it's been happening, but even more so with global warming. It's just a giant transfer of wealth. Mm-hmm. And while there is wealth, transfer it and build the cage that the French people are now feeling. They're now feeling, look, the people who are being hurt are the little people, not the big guys. Big guys are fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little people. So take the money while there's money to be had. Build the cage under the global warming thing. I mean,
yeah.
I think global leadership is afraid of their own. They're afraid of their own people.
Yeah, it's possible. And I think that the global warming, the green is the new red. I mean, it's the communism of, mm-hmm. of this particular generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the way they're getting communism done in a lot of different places. And they just said, the UN climate chief just said, we're going to have to completely transform our economies mm-hmm. and our societies
mm-hmm.
in order to stop the global warming mm-hmm. catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is that? You're going to transform the free market into
what?
Socialism, into what? Communism?
Yeah.
The green technology
mm-hmm.
that's going to replace the free market system.
And look, the free market system has done more to help global warming than any communist. Look at China. It's a mess.
Yeah.
And even all of the solar panels that the government paid for, all those guys are out of business. The Volt was setting people
they're shutting
on
it
fire.
Down. Yeah, they're
right.
shutting it down next
Didn't
year.
Work. Yet Tesla, even though Tesla was a bailout or, you know, got government money, still it's a private idea, not done by, you know, a giant corporation in bed with the global warming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was new technology that I think just what he did, he let all of those plans out online. He more than paid for it by saying, I'm not taking any patent. Take it.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the Tesla now. The Tesla, everybody says, oh, it's green. No, the new cars that are being built now, gasoline engine cars, have in the end less emissions than even a Tesla, because you're still plugging it in and it's a coal fire plant.
Right.
And on top of it, the emissions that it takes to make those cars as compared to what we're now using to make a regular gasoline engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually worse for the economy.
Yeah, not to mention the batteries and what happens with
right.
those afterwards.
Right.
They're environmental disasters.
Correct.
And it's interesting to me, too. You mentioned the French. These people have been conditioned far more than America has to be accepting of things like a carbon tax. And look how they responded to it. When it actually came down the line and they were actually given a carbon tax, they set the country on fire. They rise up and start burning the place down to the ground because they don't want to pay a carbon tax.
And this only makes Donald Trump stronger.
Oh, I think so.
I mean, the comment he had yesterday was right. Oh, looks like the people of France agree with me more than you.
Yep.
He got out of the
club. Yep.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. And then the UN summit is emitting. I mean, this just shows how these people don't even respect or believe their own nonsense.
No.
When the climate industry gets together and they start emitting more CO2 than 8,200 American homes combined in a year for this 1 week conference, and that doesn't include the thousands of people flying to get there. That just includes at the summit itself after they're mm-hmm. already there. And how many of them have flown in on private jets? It's all air travel.
All of them.
So it's more. It is more CO2 than 8,200 American homes give off in a year. And we're supposed to believe that you believe this is catastrophic? There's no way you act this way
when you,
if it's catastrophic.
No, when you say this is catastrophic, you set an example. You don't go to the beach. You don't go.
You do this on the internet.
You do
right?
it on the internet. You now have holographic virtual reality. You could go to Facebook and say, hey, I want virtual reality conferences.
Yep.
And everyone can plug in Facebook or Oculus or whoever. They would love that. Hey, the whole world can watch. You can all be there. It's going to be the first big global summit, but everyone is invited and you have to spend nothing.
You're not catering events. You're not flying people in.
Nope.
You're not doing hotels. You're not doing any of that.
You're not driving from the hotel to the conference.
Right.
You can do it in the comfort of your own office right now. You can watch it. You can participate.
And if you really believed that we're on the verge of catastrophe, isn't that how you'd be acting? Mm-hmm. I would. If I really believe that the planet is on the brink of complete disaster, there's no way I'm doing a conference like this that burns that kind of CO2. No way. So, complete hypocrisy. It's a total, to me, that's the scam. Because they know better. They know that this is not
it
is.
So, but again, I go back to why. Why is this happening now? Because you can see how unpopular it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a genius to figure out if I start raising taxes and I start hurting the economy with a plan like this, the people are going to rise up. So why, when you are already struggling as a Democratic Party or whatever, and all around the world, as you're already struggling, why is it that they continue to push forward with this?
Money, right? I mean, it's always money, isn't it? Money and power.
But with a very
Al Gore is
going to
be a climate billionaire very shortly.
Correct. But there are those who are on the front lines, the politicians, the political parties all around the world that have to win elections. At some point, you got to say, we're not going to win an election next time. So our money is being cut off. There's got to be there's more to this, because human just survival instincts for the politicians and the parties start to kick in. No, you know what? No, let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about that. Social Security. I want to cut your Social Security. GOP forever. No, I'm not talking about that. No. Your Social Security is safe. Why? Mm-hmm. Third rail. This is being shown as a third rail all around the world. You touch this in Europe, you're dead. They'll rise up against you. They'll set your country on fire because it doesn't work. The people don't want it. Brexit. You don't think the people are going to rise up? They voted, get out of the EU. They're giving them two options. You can get out, but you're not really your own country. You can't do anything with anybody else. What? Or you can be like Sweden and Switzerland, and you can trade with Mexico freely, but not the United States, not even, what? You don't think the people of Europe and of the UK, when they see this, when they can't get out, okay, you can get out of the EU, but you still have to take all the immigrants we tell you to. Excuse me? You don't think that they're going to rise up? These guys, the politicians, are either so brain dead and so far away from the people, which is possible, but we are entering a let them eat cake moment, to where I don't think that was, you know, oh, piss on the poor, let them eat cake. There was so, first of all, she never said it, but if it was, what it meant was she was surrounded by cake. She was surrounded by food. They don't have any bread. Well, let them eat cake. There's plenty of cake.
Right.
That's how out of touch. And we're back into that position.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Sponsor this half hour, it is Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is just a great service where where most people don't even know that when you sign up for, you know, Verizon or any of these other, you know, cell phone services, they're taking a portion of their profits and they are sending them to places like Planned Parenthood. Get out of that business. Now, Patriot Mobile has all of the great service, et cetera, but you're not paying all the extra from, you know, these service providers. You can switch to Patriot Mobile and put your money where your heart is. Unlimited plans now starting as low as $20 per visit. You can visit them online now at patriotmobile.com/theblaze. Use the promo code FREELINE and you'll get two lines for the price of one. Call them now, 1-800-A-PATRIOT, 1-800-A-PATRIOT, or patriotmobile.com/theblaze. Mr. Andrew Wilkow is joining us now. Andrew was one of our founding talents at the Blaze TV. I think, Andrew, when you were there, it was GBTV, was it not?
Yeah, well, I was a guest. I joined Real News after the name was changed to the Blaze. And then shortly after being a panelist on The Blaze, you guys elevated me to my own program, and I became part of the primetime lineup. So, yes, I was part of the original circle of people.
Yeah, because we had a setup for you up in New York and everything, and we're thrilled that you're back. You left and joined CRTV and been doing a bang-up job on CRTV, and now you're back into the fold, and something that is, you know, bigger and better. And I think, you know, there was a story, you will appreciate this, Andrew. There's a story, I think, in Vanity Fair about how Vox and all these big media companies, Vice, all of these internet companies, they just couldn't make a go of it. And they're all shutting down because nobody will merge. And it's a lot tougher to do internet stuff than we thought. You think?
I said this when you joined me yesterday, that, you know, people thought you were crazy to leave a major, you know, national network with all of the bells and whistles and resources. And I remember I said it to you then, I said it to you yesterday, I'll say it to you now. I thought you were crazy too, but I wanted to be part of it. I was like, this man is out of his mind, and whatever he's doing, that's where I'm going.
So anyway, so it's great to be in the family together. Let's talk a little bit about the news. A couple of things come to mind. Let's start with Joe Biden and the elections that are coming in 2020. And I'd as much as I'd like to hear you talk about the Democrats, feel free if you want to. I would like to hear what your thoughts are on the GOP. If you're going to run on a record, you kind of have to have one.
You and I toured this country together with Freedom Works, and we went to bat for Dr. Greg Brannon, Matt Bevin, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, you name it. We traversed the country for these conservatives who believe in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, limited government, all that stuff that we talk about all the time. Every single GOP member ran on cutting taxes, cutting the budget, repealing Obamacare, securing the border. Then once they got power, they turned around to people like us and said, well, hold on, we have to be pragmatic. You're going to have to give us some time. And my first thought was, the Democrats never do that to their base. They may order their response to demands of activists. You start with a takeover of health care, and you end up at transgender bathrooms, but they get there. This Republican leadership delivered on nothing. Yes, they cut taxes. That was nice. Thank you for letting us keep $1 in our pocket.
Honestly, but it wasn't stunning. You know, that's not Trump's fault. He would have signed anything.
Yeah, it wasn't something where we could say, oh my God, for the, you know, 8 years of hard work starting with the Tea Party, we've got this fundamental transformation of the tax code. We're going to have a flat tax and the states are going to pick up what they need to run what they want at the state level. We got some money in our pocket, but they spent more than the Democrats ever did. They didn't fund the border wall. Whether you agree with it or not, they all ran on it. The Democrats eventually will deliver on their promises for their base, whereas the Republicans tell us to sit down and be quiet until the next time they need our programs, our audiences, and the activists in the base of the party to deliver them victories.
Imagine, Andrew, if Donald Trump weren't president, it was Hillary, and the caravan came to our gate. They would have opened the borders, even though right now she is across the, you know, across the ocean and she's in Europe. And she's like, oh, boy, that immigration thing. Boy, that didn't work out well. That was probably a mistake. Probably. Yeah. And they're going to do the same thing if we don't get real lasting security. And the GOP, they have a few more weeks to do it. They've now punted the.
They aren't going to.
They're not going to.
They aren't going to. You know they're not going to.
They're not going to.
If they could. Why would they do something in the lame duck they didn't do when they had, when the iron was hot? What's their motivation at this point?
I don't know, to not be terrible human beings.
Do you remember me sitting on set with you in Texas and you said to me something to the effect of talk me down from the ledge on Mitt Romney, and I said he's not a communist.
Right.
That was all I could give right. you was he's not the communist.
Yeah, I know. And I had that. I had that as well. That was kind of where I was.
You know what's sad about the migrant crisis is that this is something that nobody talks about, especially in Democrat circles, that we sent for the last year available $297 million to Guatemala, $127 million to Honduras, and we're doing those packages almost annually. If you look up on USAID's website, it's actually a very good website for a government site. Not $297 million to veterans, not $297 million to failing school districts, not $297 million for our own infrastructure, beloved infrastructure, to these other countries. And we're being told they're fleeing poverty and violence. Well, the USAID website breaks down almost to the dollar how much we spend on infrastructure, how much we spend on healthcare, education, civil society, governance, law enforcement. And I have not heard any credible voice in the Congress, Republican or Democrat, the president's mentioned it, but not in Congress, of, hey, why are we sending the money there if the people are coming here? If we've sent the money to comfort them, to better them, to improve their lot in life there, why are the people coming here? And my only conclusion is it's a win-win for these governments. We send them the money. They send us the people. They keep the money. Don't have to spend it on the people. They come here. We give them health care. We find them a job. We give them education. It's a win-win if you're the government of Honduras.
I completely agree with you. And I would, if I were Donald Trump, and I'm really disappointed that we haven't done this, I would cut off every dime. Look, I'll help you, but you are not to send your people here. Far as Mexico is concerned, they allowed that caravan to continue to go. They were breaking Mexican laws. They still are. Turn that caravan around. And I don't know why we haven't gotten tough and just said, okay, guys, we shouldn't be dealing with this. This is your problem. Mexico, you let them come through your country. Honduras, you don't get a dime from us. You're not going to stop people. We're cutting you off.
But when we talk about the generosity of America, we can argue back and forth about foreign aid. But haven't we done what isn't that we haven't done for the people of these countries? This is so, you know, we can separate the European question about migration. We have been giving these countries, these people that we see that are desperate, that are following voices, that are telling them. And you know what's really sick, Glenn? I know you know this. This is the worst epidemic of Alinsky. Cloward, Piven, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. These poor people are just the only person that benefits from community organizing is the organizer. Barack Obama's got a $65 million book deal, and the South Side of Chicago is the South Side of Chicago. These people are being used by people who are furthering their own political agenda and credibility, and it's sick. It is sickening to watch the images of women carrying children looking for an end to this, and they're being led by people who know darn well this is not how you file an asylum claim. This is not how you immigrate. This is not how it's done. They have to know. These people are rotten, and they're evil.
Tell me your take quickly on Mueller, what we found out yesterday about Flynn, and what next year looks like.
Well, for a guy that allegedly colluded with the Russian government, you know, having calls with Sergei Kislyak as the incoming national security advisor over certain global sanctions, if that is the root of collusion with Russia, no jail time sounds pretty good for a guy who's such a rogue agent. And by the way, why aren't we looking at Claire McCaskill's very tight relationship with Sergei Kislyak? If business in Russia, the Moscow Tower, is some smoke and fire of criminality, why aren't the Podestas, and by virtue of that, Clinton, who took $500,000 to go speak to Putin's bank? Mm-hmm. Why is this? Look, if you want to have a sense of law and order and fairness and say we have to make sure our political class is on the up and up, you can't say it's okay when they do it. You can't say that we're going to ignore the fact that Hillary Clinton was deleting emails. We're going to ignore the fact she was destroying devices and evidence. We're going to ignore the fact that people got their eyes on classified information like Anthony Weiner. And we're going to say, but, you know, somebody wanted to go to Trump Tower and meet with Don Jr. to lobby over the Majitsky Act. That's it. The president, he has to be impeached.
Yeah, it's and I think this is what people are missing, because they immediately, you say that and people on the left will immediately jump to, oh, that's whataboutism. No, it's really not, you know, but it is basic fairness, which I thought the left was all about. You can't say I'm going to apply the law this time, but not last time or not the next time. It has to be blind. Justice must be blind. And I think that's all that the American people want, is just, can we just apply these things equally? And it's so ironic to me that people are coming to our border who are fleeing chaos in their own countries. They say they're fleeing it because they can't work, they can't have a job, and they have no chance, because there is no equal justice system. And they're coming here. They're asking us to break the law, which would create what they had. And on top of it, we are allowing both sides, Democrats and Republicans, we are allowing our country to become a kleptocracy, where it's just the thieves that are running it.
I got something you're going to love, and it's going to scare you at the same time. I know you're a big fan of investigative journalism and documentary and journalism. This is a first for me. And we did this, we produced this before we even knew that there was going to be a coming together of the CRTV and Blaze Universe.
Okay, tell me about this documentary that you did, investigative journalism.
Yeah, it's a first for me. We sent a camera crew down to the border, and we interviewed former law enforcement officials, many of whom we had to obscure. And what they will tell you, and this is what's really frightening, and it starts at the border and it goes to small towns throughout the Midwest. The documentary series, two-parter, called Cartel in the Heartland, Cartel in the Heartland, shows how Hezbollah and Hamas have gotten into an unholy alliance with the human smuggling and drug cartels. The terrorist organizations have found the border so porous and profit to be made, to be sent back for their activities in the Middle East and some even in the United States, that they've entered into this agreement where the terrorist organizations are teaching the cartels about explosives, weapons, providing weapons. They are wholly involved now in the drug trade and the human smuggling trade at the border. And this is making its way to small towns, where small town police departments, with their budgets and limited resources, are not able to keep up with the influx of gang activity. And you are going to be shocked when you hear some of these people. Think of it like this, Glenn, and your audience can really think about it like this. Try to imagine how drugs get into prisons. Try to imagine the kind of things that we know go on in the prison system under the watch of the guards, the warden, the state, what have you. Mm-hmm. Put that on steroids, that there are people on the border, on our side as well, that we think are the good guys, that are making money by enabling this unholy alliance between Hamas, Hezbollah, MS-13, Los Zetas, you name it.
All right,
they have found, yes.
So I'm sorry to cut you off. I just have to go to the break.
I understand.
Cartel in the Heartland?
Yes, two-part series. First part airs tomorrow.
Okay.
On Blaze TV.
Blaze TV, Cartland, Cartel in the Heartland, and you can find that now at blazetv.com. First episode airs tomorrow. Andrew, thank you very much. If I can get an advance, I'll watch it, and maybe we can have you on as well later this week, so I can comment on it. Cartel in the Heartland on blazetv.com/Beck. Sign up, use Beck Christmas, and you'll save $20 on your year subscription.
Glenn Beck.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Lauren Chen, she is the Roaming Millennial, a host of Roaming Millennial Uncensored. She is somebody that has about 20 million views on YouTube, hundreds of thousands of followers. She has also been on Fox News, The Daily Wire, Rebel Media, PragerU, The Rubin Report. She was born in Canada, raised in Hong Kong, still lives in Canada, and now is truly a very smart voice for freedom. And Lauren, I have to, first of all, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have to start with this. What is it with Canada? All of the intellectuals are like bailing our ass out.
Well, you know, it's funny because if you look at, I guess, conservative figures right now, a disproportionate amount of them are Canadian. So on the one hand, that's kind of cool. But on the other, I think it's like that right now because things have gotten so bad in Canada, just so off the rails, that there's been like a reactionary movement. I hope that the States doesn't get to that point. And so I'm
so like, what is the deal? Well, because I've always thought Canada was off the rails.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and Americans, nothing against Canada. I love Canada.
I grew
up about 40 miles away. I have good Canadian friends, you know, all that crap. But I've always thought Canada was off the rails.
Yeah.
What is happening now that you think maybe Americans don't really understand?
Right. So for the longest time in Canada, we've had that whole universal healthcare, socialized medicine thing. But it's going even further than that now, because right now we have someone like Justin Trudeau in power, and, you know, places like Ontario, they're actually legislating things like gender identity as protected for children, right? Which means that if you're a parent and your daughter or son decides that, I don't know, they're omnigender or whatever the new trendy thing is these days, you could potentially have your parental rights in danger for not recognizing that. So, and not to mention the fact that now not only do we have this whole political correctness that has just infested our government, but combine that with the refugee crisis that's going on in Europe, Canada isn't Sweden or Germany right now by any means. But again, with someone like Trudeau in power, we're seeing those same kinds of challenges that Europe has been seeing.
Is there anything about you growing up in Hong Kong that helps you see the world differently?
I think so. I mean, Hong Kong has an interesting history. If you know about the British ruling it for 100 years and then it going back to China. And it's funny because I grew up in Hong Kong when it was currently a colonial power. I mean, between Hong Kong and Canada, it's kind of like I'm British adjacent, I guess.
Yes.
But since then, every time I go back, when, you know, the Chinese, they took things over again, there's more and more an encroachment of freedoms that I think a lot of Hong Kong people took for granted, especially during the 90s, things like religious freedom, freedom of the press. And I think that for Canadians and Americans may not have ever been something that they need to be consciously aware of. But when you come from a background where there's actually political upheaval currently going on in a very big way, I think it just makes you a lot more cautious of government power.
So what is it that you have to say that has connected with 20 million people? What is it that you think people are saying, yes, finally somebody saying that?
You know, I ask myself that question a lot.
Yeah.
Shocks me still, but I think people, a lot of them, and what's interesting is that on YouTube, which is where I started off, my audience isn't entirely conservative. I have a lot of people on the left who are listening to me.
That's good.
Yeah, and I think it's great, and I get a lot of people saying, hey, I don't agree with you, but I appreciate your perspective, which is amazing. And we need more people listening in on people they don't agree with. But I think what people are interested in is the fact that I'm not trying to demonize anybody. I don't hate anybody. I don't think of myself as an unreasonable person. I'm just trying to call out what I see as unreasonableness in the world that is masquerading as civility, as tolerance, as acceptance, or whatever they're calling it nowadays, when it's really the opposite.
Are you concerned at all about deplatforming?
Yeah, as someone who started off on YouTube, that's been something I can't remember not being concerned about, whether that's, you know, being flagged, demonetized, just kicked off the platform entirely. But hey, that's why I'm so thankful that conservative media platforms like this exist, because it's necessary. And I have people who are wanting to get started in commentary or writing ask me for some advice, and the number one thing I could tell them is that to not put your basket in any one platform, because it could be taken away at any point, especially mm-hmm. if you're someone who says anything unpopular in mm-hmm. regard to gender, immigration, anything like that.
That's the thing that, you know, the press and some people try to make this merger between mm-hmm. CRTV and the Blaze TV about, you know, about me or Mark or money or whatever. It's not. It's really, truly about just like-minded people all across the conservative spectrum coming together and saying, I want to be in a pack, because if we don't hang together, we'll hang separately. They'll just pick us off one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important.
Right. And I'm excited about this as someone who not only produces conservative media, but also watches a heck of a lot of it.
Yeah.
I like the idea of having everything in one place. And I think if you're a subscriber, it's kind of hard to say, hey, I want this show and I want this show, but I only have this many dollars per month
yeah.
to buy like 30 different subscriptions.
Yeah.
But what's been interesting to me, like you've mentioned, is that people are framing this as an echo chamber. And I think if you think that between like yourself, Crowder, Gavin McInnes, that's an echo chamber of everyone thinking the same thing. You just haven't been watching their
you
shows.
Haven't.
You haven't. No.
They take everything that disagrees that, we should have open borders and America is a bad place. And they just, anything outside of that, they just say it's all crazy.
Yeah, all right-wing extremists.
Right.
Yeah.
We have people who are, you know, rah-rah GOP kind mm-hmm. of, you know.
And libertarians
and
as
then
well.
Libertarians.
Yeah.
We have the entire spectrum. And I'm hoping that that we can be an example of all these different voices coming together. And when we have differences, just coming on each other's show and saying, hey, dude, I have a problem with this.
Right.
Can you explain or help me? And we may still disagree, but we don't have to kill each other over it.
Right. We don't have to call each other Nazis and
right.
racist, sexist.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So tell me what keeps you up at night, that you think if more people could just, if they just be aware of this, or if they could just, you know, thread the needle through this, what mm-hmm. is it?
Well, when I was in college, I studied political science, and for the longest time, I thought everything revolved around policy. And it's funny because I was small government minded, but I was still in the mindset that of, oh, if government were this specific way, then society would be perfect. It happened that the way I thought government should be was small, limited, and pro-freedom, but I was still very reliant on outside forces being able to dictate how good society is.
Mm-hmm.
The older that I've gotten, the more I've realized that policy is, of course, important. I will never say that it's not, but at the same time, as I get older, I think that if more people were to, I guess, check themselves, their own personal lives, and for me, that's very, very largely Christianity. If we were to be more engaged with that and how we behave with our family members, our friends, strangers, all of these questions about politics, it's not that they wouldn't matter, but they would be a lot less important, right? I mean, if people, for example, had healthy family lives, then the question of child poverty would be less important, right?
Mm-hmm.
If people had, I guess, more opportunities because they embraced their own education and the value of hard work, then things like welfare would be less of an issue. Not that mm-hmm. they wouldn't matter, but we wouldn't be, I guess, it wouldn't be a make or break issue. And so,
well, if you don't self-regulate, somebody has to do it for you.
Right. And Dennis Prager talks about this a lot, where if you have small government, you kind of need a big God, right? You need something to, I guess, motivate you, something that you care about, something you're passionate about. Otherwise, it's anarchy. And I think Jordan Peterson, he's not a Christian, but he's someone who is at least trying to talk about the need for self-improvement and the value of that. And people are responding to it in a big way.
I think millennials get a bad name. I think they get a bad rap. And I don't know, maybe they are all what everybody says. I haven't met them. I have met some, but I've met those same people in my generation.
Right.
I mean, that's normal. Tell me who the millennial generation is in your opinion.
In my opinion, we're well-educated. A lot of us have degrees. We're entrepreneurial, which is something that's interesting because as much as we tend towards socialism, which absolutely millennials do, we're also, I guess, more of a self-starting generation than previous generations. So it's not that we're that great, but through technology, we just have the greater means to do it.
This is the thing I can't understand about millennials, because when I got into radio, it's been 45 years, I had to go to the FCC and take a test to be able to know how to operate a transmitter. Okay, I had to take a test, then I had to go to a corporation, get a job. You know, there were very few jobs, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to do any of that stuff now. And you don't even have to go on radio. You can do it from your own home with your own stuff. You can be heard more than any other time. You want to be a band? In my generation, you had to wait for the record scout to come to the bar that you were playing. You don't even need that anymore. How is it this generation, who is more free to do things because of the internet than any other generation ever in the history of mankind, is still saying, but I want more government?
Well, I think it's kind of a paradox. We're so used to this freedom because we have so much freedom, whether that's, you know, racially, in terms of gender. We're just a very free, very egalitarian generation. And I think that's almost made us complacent because we're so used to having things so great, so amazing. Not that there haven't been, I guess, economic, you know, recessions associated with our generation coming into the workforce, which there have been. But we're so used to everything going our way that we almost can't imagine a way that it's not working out. So I think, you know, when someone my age looks at something like healthcare in the U.S., which, you know what, as much as liberals like to say Republicans or the right or whatever think the American healthcare system is currently great, I've never heard a single person on the right say, yeah, this is, we're good, this is how it should be. But in any case, they look at something like that and think, oh, well, this is kind of not working, so let's just go for full-on socialism, right? Why not? Because they don't understand that, no, like, things can get significantly worse. This is, like, if you think this is awful, you have not seen anything.
That kills me, because it's almost like you've never traveled anywhere else before in your life. You know, when we look at our problems today, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the number one cause of death, 120 years ago for women was fire. They would burn to death. I mean, we don't even have that. I don't think that's even on the top 1,000 ways to die for women today.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, people who complain about things like microaggressions or manspreading, all those things, like anytime I hear someone just mention those words, what I think of is just privilege, like definitely class privilege. If that's what you're worried about, then
correct.
I'm sorry, you've had a pretty nice life. And also, this is a word that's been overused, but Eurocentric. Like, if that's your problems, that's such a first world problem. And it's almost kind of, it's a sign of how well we've come as a society, ironically, that now this is what we're concerned about.
Yeah, it really is. It shows how fat we are.
Yeah,
really, it is.
Sure.
You have, like, you know, you don't have enough to do. You don't have to go out and go find your own food, build your own fire, build your own house, hitch the wagon with the horses to go into the town. I mean, you have so much time. You're like, you know what? I was really offended by something that somebody said, and I think I should put a group together and we should start a hashtag group. Oh my gosh.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.